coming back to cultural model, Stephen Prothero had a book, American Jesus, and I always thought this helps with this. He catalogs in that book all the different ways Jesus has been portrayed throughout history. And in the sort of Romantic era, but then in also the Victorian era, you have pictures of Jesus that were super effeminate.
Yeah.
And then you get a response. And the response was Billy Sunday. Billy Sunday crafted an image of Jesus that had muscles.
Well, he was an athlete.
He was an athlete.
Billy Sunday, baseball player, so professional baseball player.
There was the Billy Sunday Jesus. Like that book's fascinating to show all the different movements in history of how Jesus, and this is why Second Commandment matters, by the way. We don't need to make images of Jesus, but we shouldn't. But it captures in that book to show how culture trends, Victorian era, moving into the industrialization era, and reactions against previous generations, how shifts happen, and the issue of masculinity becomes front and center. And we are in a major shift right now, I think, whereas we have seen, you know, for some time, the feminization of men.
Yeah.
Like they've been feminized. It's just true.
Well, just back to the Jesus thing. Yeah. You think after the Billy Sunday era, I don't know if there's anything in between, but certainly in the 1960s and 70s, you get the hippie Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus Christ Superstar and all that kind of stuff.
The pictures are in there, in that book, of effeminate, long-haired.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that image of Jesus has stuck with us.
Totally.
All through our era.
Blonde-haired, blue-eyed, hippie Jesus from
hippie
Berkeley.
Jesus. Yeah, in a toga.
Yeah.
Right? In a toga with his chest showing.
Right,
you know,
right.
I had that image in the church I grew up with, and I always thought that was just offensive.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
But that was a hippie Jesus.
Yeah.
And so there's a reaction happening right now. Now Dan told me, don't use the figure I was going to use because no one will get this figure, but I call it the Merle Haggard effect, but it shows my age, you know, drive through Bakersfield 99 and it says Merle Haggard drive.
You're a California hillbilly.
I'm a California. Yeah. You know, I think my relatives came over from the Dust Bowl. So they went to the Central Valley, which is a lot of people from the Central Valley. That's how it grew. But anyways, Merle Haggard was, you know, I think there's sort of, you mentioned Andrew Tate is probably a better example. You know, people are craving, they want a man.
Yeah.
You know, Merle, you know, criticized government. What was the one song? You know, he talked about, you love our milk and honey, but not our way of living, you know? So Merle sort of crafted a tough guy response to a lot of the liberal ideas of the government and the society. I think there's a cultural model that people get confused with. And that's where I want to wrestle with a little bit. There are certain things that are physical about a man being a man.
Right.
Right. But it doesn't ultimately define a man being a man. Just because we wear beards doesn't make us a man. Right.
Our beards are pretty short compared to some of these guys.
Yeah.
We're probably less than fully masculine compared to some of these guys with their ZZ Top beards.
Yeah, I mean, you know, pulling out a stogie, which we like, you know, wearing a flannel shirt. You know, it was always like the guy in high school.
That's like cosplay to
it's
me.
It's cosplay.
The overreaction, this is what I talked about earlier. Yeah. Yes, we have a feminization in our culture. Mm-hmm. Everything we see, not everything, but much of what we see in media is the demasculinization of American culture. Every sitcom has the hapless dad who's just a goof and his wife is a genius and his kids abuse him and all that. It's a trope.
Al Bundy.
Yeah. It's a joke. It's like so played out at this point. Yeah. Like, really, you're going to do this again? We've seen this 1,000 times. Yeah. So they swing to the other side into this hyper macho cosplay.
Right.
They're cosplaying as men.
Uh-huh.
Do you have to have a giant beard and a flannel shirt and work boots to be a man? I don't think so.
No. No. And I always say, you know, there may be things that men like to do. Go do them with your sons. You take them to the ball game. There are important things you can do. If you want to ride the four-wheeler, go ride the four-wheeler. I mean, those are personal choices. But we want to be careful that we're not in reaction and defining who a man is in reaction, like I'm seeing with a lot of the current movements of what defines a man, and it simply being sort of a renegade, somebody who's always pushing boundaries, somebody who's, now it's true, you know, I think society in many ways, when you have boys who have lots of testosterone growing up, there may have been efforts to sort of control that.
Sure.
And in ways that are unhealthy in society, sort of knock back the boy so that he doesn't express who he is as a male.
The Prussian school system,
yeah,
is designed to create good factory workers,
right,
and to turn, yeah, energetic boys into those who will sit at a desk for hours,
right,
right, and be good worker drones. Mm-hmm. It was designed to create an army, not to educate children. So yeah, there are many things in our culture,
yeah,
that contribute to the attack on masculinity. To me, these guys always worry me. The ones who talk, I'm not so much about masculinity, obviously we're talking about it now, but the ones who like to thump their chest.
Yeah.
Look at me, yeah, how manly I am.
Right.
To me, it's kind of like when Margaret Thatcher said, power is like being a lady. If you have to tell people you are, you aren't.
Yeah. No, that's exactly,
you have to tell,
right,
people you're powerful. You're not powerful. They know it. Right. If you have to tell people how manly you are, you're not that manly.
Well, and that's, so
people see it.
So this is like the guy, if I can get a little more crass with it, this is like the guy in high school who was 5'6" and bought the Chevy truck and lifted it, yes, up on 38.
Napoleon syndrome.
Like we all knew that guy wasn't tough, but like he drove the truck to try to show everyone he was tough.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. Like everyone knew that was embarrassing. Like that's the kind of stuff that's happening right now.
Right.
And that's what's done. And so in reaction, that's what fuels the sort of back and forth of movements. What people don't understand, I think we were talking about ahead of time, I think what you're going to see is we've had this sort of shift back to this manliness. The next movement's going to come on even stronger,
yes,
in some way, shape, or form, because we're not really hitting the target here.
Right.
We're not hitting the target on what is a man and what is a woman. We're simply doing cultural models that are supporting tribal identity groups.
Yeah.
That's why I use the Merle Haggard effect. Like, I love country music. Like I don't mind country music. I love, there's something about feeling tough. Like, there's something about getting in my 79 Bronco, which I used to have, I had to sell because
you're not masculine enough to drive it.
Well, in Southern California, that's what people who say we live in a blue state. I want them to know I was driving a 79 Bronco, but I had to sell it. Now here's a masculine move. To get my daughter through college. Yeah.
Sacrificing.
There's a masculine move. Do you know how hard that was? I loved my Bronco.
Sacrificing,
you know,
your desires,
yeah,
for others. That's right. As masculine as it gets.
Exactly.
Sacrificing, yeah, my wants for the needs of others. That's real manhood.
Right. But putting, you know, telling everyone, making my truck loud and letting everyone know that I only get 8 miles a gallon. to provoke the other side is not masculine.
No.
You know, so.
Yeah. And it's why. Why do you have to peacock like
now,
that?
Now transfer that to the church for a minute.
Ugh.
Mark Driscoll. Like, the reason he was successful is because he had this macho approach, which was ironic because he would wear Mickey Mouse t-shirts. I never, right, understood that. But he came off as the tough guy from the other side of the tracks. He wanted, yeah, everyone to know he got in fights when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And he wanted everyone to know how tough he was.
Yeah.
Right. And
which is a joke.
It's a joke.
Because just like power, if you have to tell people you're powerful, you, yeah, aren't. If you have to tell people you're a tough guy, you're not a tough guy. I'm not a tough guy.
Right.
I know tough guys. Real tough guys.
Yeah, they went to war, by the way.
They don't have to tell people
they fought in wars.
They don't have to wear it on their sleeve.
Yeah.
They're secure in themselves. They don't have to peacock around as tough guys. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to see them as real tough guys because, mm-hmm, they will take off your head.
They'll take off your head. And that's absolutely right, you know.
And this goes back to definition of manhood. I think Jordan Peterson said stuff like this, like real manhood is not being an outward tough guy, is not being violent. But being a man, a strong man, is being capable of violence, but restraining,
see, that's
that,
right,
violence.
It's putting, now we can get really, really practical here. It's putting Johnny Cash's finger down.
Right.
Like that's masculine. Yeah. The easy thing to do is to put the finger up.
Right.
And there's something about that image. Why? It appeals to the flesh. Why? Because it's rugged. It's rebellious. It was rebellious against the government.
But it's adolescent.
That's exactly right.
That's a 12-year-old boy who's not a man.
I know. That's exactly right.
A real man, if he is standing up against oppression, tyranny, if you want to take that image of Johnny Cash in that way, a real man isn't going to flip the bird. Mm-mm. He's going to act in ways, functional ways that will be productive in taking down that oppression and tyranny. The middle finger does nothing.
See, but people, Dan, do not think this way. I'm coming back to Driscoll. The reason it worked is because he tapped into something he knew. You had men who were being lazy. You had men who were not loving their wives. You had men, there was a certain stereotype cast, but.
And an insecurity, like it says in Fight Club, we're a generation of men raised by women.
Right, right.
There's an insecurity. Okay. Am I less than a man?
No, this is important, what you just said. And I look back to Breakfast Club, which our generation.
You're pulling
right?
out all the latest references.
I'm pulling
Merle
out
Haggard
all the,
Breakfast Club.
I'm so old, but that's Gen X. That's Gen X. Our parents were kind of absent.
Which was Driscoll. Driscoll's Gen X.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Our parents were absent. We had to do it ourselves and we didn't have role models.
Right.
So the role models, you know, now there's helicopter parenting everywhere. Ugh. It's like, it's crazy. You got to be at every sporting event. You can't miss one or you're a bad parent. Like, okay. At that time, we were on our own. Latchkey kids was a thing. Right. That was a thing, right? Yeah. So
that's what I don't understand. Just a meaningless tangent.
We're warming up.
Going
here.
Back to the changes in masculinity.
Yeah.
You know, previous generations. My dad never went to one of my little league games. Yeah. He never was around. He was working all the
tough
time.
Enough.
Blah, blah, blah. We've swung so far the other way. My kid's school has functions at 9 a.m. And it's packed with dads.
Oh, no, no, no. This is
what
this
are you
has
doing?
Been a source of real grief.
I have a job. I can't be there at 9 o'clock in the morning on a weekday.
This has been a source of grief.
Who can do this?
No, no, that's right. I look at these parents. I think they're being such great parents because they'd never miss one event. There's something to, listen, being a man, countercultural here, there's something to not putting your kids at the center of your existence.
That's right.
Like there's something.
The kids are not the center of your home.
They are not the center of the home. It's kind of like the kid who runs up and, you know, interrupts parents talking. Nobody ever rebukes that anymore. Okay, yes. We're a little off. But coming back to Driscoll.
That's what men do. We go on tangents. We chase rabbit trails.
Coming back to Driscoll. So Driscoll tapped into this thing and he would beat men to a pulp. Yell at them, scream at them. All with this rugged masculinity, and the wives loved it, ironically, at that time. It worked. So, you know, that kind of approach, people think, now there's somebody who's really addressing the problem. And the way he treated, he would use crass language. He would be abrasive. There's a number of figures doing this right now, okay, to sort of gain a market share in this whole thing, which is exactly what it is. It's market share, right? That is not at all what the scriptures are talking about when it talks about masculinity. We have to say that so clearly because people look at movements and trends and they think everything's been so soft, everything's been so effeminate, everything's been feminized, that's the right response.
Yeah.
Brash,
right.
Abrasive men who do the cosplay.
That is not restraining power. That is a weak man who is letting his anger overtake him.
Right.
Did he have legitimate complaints with these guys? I don't know. I don't know the context.
Yeah, he may have.
But I have heard him, you know, how dare you, and that kind of stuff. Yeah. That is a weak man. Mm-hmm. A strong man who restrains the violence that he's capable of does not have to raise his voice like that. Does not have to browbeat the men that he leads. They would respect him as a leader, as a strong leader, without him raising his voice, without him bullying them. That's a weak man who can't control himself.
That's exactly right. You have to see that for what it is.
And weak men, again, back to Jordan Peterson, who sadly has become an icon for men because there are so few in our culture today.
I know.
Sadly, Jordan Peterson is standing in a role that fathers should have, that pastors should have. And instead, they look to Jordan Peterson because there's such a gap to fill. But he says the most dangerous people in the world are weak men, not strong men. Strong men can restrain their violence. Weak men can't. Mm-hmm. And they bottle it up and bottle it up, and then they explode like Driscoll.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. So the kind of qualities that the scripture holds out for what is true manliness, just for a minute. Self-control, you're talking about. Being able to be self-controlled, controlling your lusts, controlling your desires, controlling
your
appetites. Your appetites, all those things. There's a start for godly manliness, right? Being able to do, you know, when you think of Christ, speaking of meekness in the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. I don't know too many people today who would ever point to meekness as a quality of manliness.
Right.
So right there, you have to start thinking the paradigms on which we're operating of what is manliness have to completely come down.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. For those, let me say this too. We understand of anyone. We appreciate the gym. We appreciate being men. We appreciate doing manly things. We understand what the culture's tried to do here, and we're flat against it. But we also need to think through what is the right response. The solutions that are being proposed only aggravate the situation and make it worse. We have to think carefully about what is the right kind of response that demonstrates true qualities of manliness, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we think about—
And back to the meekness.
Yeah.
Meekness is not weakness.
It's not weakness, right?
You don't think Jesus was capable of great violence? Mm-hmm. He could have turned the entire city upside down mm-hmm. in a moment. He restrained his violence and took on meekness for not only because it was in obedience to God's law, but for the betterment to love his neighbor.
So this is good. I'm preaching Matthew 9 this week, and I was struck by how Matthew presents before his inclusio at the end of chapter 9, where he says, gives sort of the whole program of his training of the disciples for going out to minister to the nations. And it says what drove him. He had compassion on the multitudes as sheep without a shepherd.
Right.
That it welled up with him, our Savior, the ultimate man.
Yes.
Welled up with compassion for the lost. Just before that, the previous verse says, the Pharisees said, this guy doesn't cast out demons except by Beelzebub, ruler of demons. There's no response from Jesus.
Yep.
I was blown away. It's the no response that's surprising. And the next verse is, he had compassion. He controlled and he did not exercise his just wrath right then and there because he did the very thing we're talking about, meekness and demonstrating compassion. Yep.
Same thing I just preached from Mark 8, where the Pharisees come to him demanding a sign from heaven. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm not going to give this generation a sign. No. He could have said, you want a sign? I'll show you a sign and rain down fire and brimstone and destroyed everybody in sight. But no, he's restrained.
Yeah, but Dan, he flipped tables.
Yeah.
That's kind of the common response. Yeah, in the sanctuary of the Lord.
Right.
To redemptive historically cleanse the temple.
Yes.
He's doing a redemptive act.
Right.
He is actually doing what the prophet said he would do to identify him in overturning the pollution and, you know, the gimmickry of the Pharisees and the scribes and the leaders. So,
and it was righteous.
Do we have righteous anger at things? Yeah. Of course.
And it wasn't to thump his chest.
Right.
And to show, oh, you want to see a tough guy? I'll flip this table. No. He's cleansing the house of God.
The one time he showed himself, well, not one, there's numerous times. The one time he showed his glory was concealed on the transfiguration for a moment that he was so bright and his glory shone that they all ducked,
yep.
you know. But he didn't do that throughout the course of his ministry. It was veiled in this humanity of taking on an ordinary body that had no desire. He didn't even take on this form. If you look at images of Jesus, he's always painted up and he always has abs and he always has muscles.
He's not the bodybuilder on the cross.
He's not the bodybuilder. Like, he didn't even choose that, right? The most manly thing he did was lay down his life for the sheep.
Yeah.
You know? So self-control, patience, you know, what a quality of a true man is patience. Kindness, like we're talking about being. Now, again, none of this is weakness. None of this means compromise. None of this means that we're not standing up for truth, right, that we're not speaking the truth, that we're not being cowards, that we're being cowards in refusing to address. No, listen, a man also addresses falsehood and is willing to tell somebody that they're wrong. That's what a man does, but he does it with an objective.
Right. And I think with that is wisdom.
Wisdom. Right.
Yes, we need to be courageous. We need to contend for the faith in a wise way, mm-hmm, not in a foolhardy adolescent way, right, that does more harm than good.
Right.
We're actually undermining our intentions if we act in an unwise way, because we think we're being courageous, standing for the truth, when in reality, we're hurting our own cause.
Right.
We have to be wise as serpents, as Jesus says.
That's exactly right.
Yes, there is a time to stand. There is a time to fight. Sometimes physically, definitely spiritually, but it has to be with wisdom.
And how did that wisdom show itself? Well, if the first Adam failed by refusing to rise up and crush the head of the serpent in the garden, what did he do? He overcame the serpent in wisdom. How? By the death of the cross.
Yes.
At Golgotha. Place of the skull where he crushed. So the wisdom and patience and discipline, about the discipline of him staying focused on his mission and the work, right, the way the Father gave him to do. He was driven by that. Where it's interesting when we talk about work, getting back to that, when he said, I have a food to do. This is the work that the Father gave me to save every last one of my sheep. That was his work.
Yeah.
He was so focused on that. He provided. He was a provider.
Yeah.
Right. He is the provider.
Right.
You know, and that's what we do as men. We work to provide. That's why that idleness is so important to address. You will not be fulfilled as a man if you're being idle. If you're sitting around in front of the internet all day and you're looking at pornography, we should address that. There may be a strong reason for a lack of testosterone levels going, for them going down in men. And they're, you know, step on men a little bit here, but they're marrying later. Why?
Yeah.
Why? You know, those are important questions.
Right.
Procreation matters.
Yeah.
Within the it's not just pleasure. God gave that in the blessing of the context of marriage.
And you look at, just very practically, you look at the birth rates in the Western world. We're not at replacement rate.
Right.
We're not having enough children.
Right.
That's part of being a man, is producing offspring.
Right.
If God blesses you with that. And at least try, you know, of course, yeah, some people are not able to do that. We feel for them. And it's not a requirement to be a man, but that's part of what God has ordained, male and female, that we produce offspring, mm-hmm, to fill the earth. But men are putting that off. Well, I don't want to have kids. They'll inhibit me. I won't be able to do my fun hobbies or whatever if I have kids around. I won't have the money to do what I want to do, because kids take all your money. All these selfish, mm-hmm, childish, adolescent pursuits that keep us from being the men that God intended for us to be.
It's not manly to sit around all day. It's adolescent to sit around and attack people online, by the way. I mean, that is just the most adolescent, juvenile behavior, to think that that's fulfilling some calling. My guess is it's not just young men, that we have a lot of middle-aged men doing this too, who are wasting away life.
And okay, let's take a charitable interpretation of this. These guys are are zealous for the truth. They see error. They want to instruct people. Okay, that's noble. It's probably, again, being wise. Is it wise to spend your time in YouTube comment boxes trying to instruct people, or on Twitter or Facebook in some theological debate? Is that wise? Or would it be better to channel those noble desires of spreading the truth in one-on-one settings? Go find somebody and teach him.
Let's talk about this. This is good. Yeah.
It is so much more effective face-to-face instruction, teaching, than just blasting it out of the internet.
Our worlds have to get smaller.
Yes.
This is part of the thing. We're all trying to do something great. And we all need to think about more the people who are right in front of us and stop thinking we're going to change the world online. This is ridiculous. Like, you're not changing anything online.
No.
People have forgotten what you posted
right
a minute ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
So on to the next thing.
They're on to the next thing. And so your influence, your sphere of influence, you're not really doing anything good. So you may take in stuff from the internet, you may use it well, but use it to be a blessing to those in front. And that's where I want to go with this, to be positive on this. So let's say we do have a lot of young men who are frustrated. We obviously do. We've got to give them direction. They're frustrated. How do we give them positive ways forward? To understand that both Dan and I believe we want to minister well to you too. We understand, as I was saying earlier, we understand what the culture's done. We understand that it's pushing things on us that are harmful and destructive. So what is the positive answer? And I have a few here, and I want you to jump in here, but giving guidance and direction for men in this culture that seeks to feminize them. Okay. Number one, you just mentioned it. Serve others.
Yeah.
Like, if Jesus said, you know, one of the greatest blessings in life is simply to go and serve others. If you're caught in yourself and you're caught in pornography, or you're caught in all these things that you're only thinking about yourself all day long, the best way to get out of yourself is to go visit the widow and the orphan.
Yeah.
Right. Look at go talk to the ones who actually, a man who's been through war, they're still around.
Right.
You know, in this church, I have people who've been through wars. Yeah. They came over after the war and, you know, learn from them.
Yeah.
So we'll get to mentors in a minute, but serving others pulls you out of yourself.
Right. Everybody can serve somebody.
Right. Yeah. We talked about building something. When I was a kid, I remember building a fort. I still remember it.
Oh, yeah.
Building a fort over the creek. Wow. I was so proud of that.
Wow.
You know, I still can't really build much, but that's why I write sermons. But, you know, building something, like we said, body, family, business, fence.
Yeah.
It's okay. Go do that. That's important.
Right. It's important for us to have a task.
Yeah.
And I think it goes back to the garden.
Yeah.
And I encourage retired guys in our church with this, you know, just because you're not working a 40-hour week or whatever, you still need a task.
Right.
Men need a task. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be some backbreaking job in your 70s and 80s, but you still need a task to fulfill. That gives you a sense of self-worth, mm-hmm. value. You're productive. It's good for all of us. If you don't have that fulfillment, that good fulfillment from your occupation, we'll find that fulfillment in some other task. Mm-hmm. Build something. It doesn't have to be physically build something, but you're building something in your time and you can look at it and have a sense of satisfaction.
Right. And to follow up with that, you know, embrace your, as we were talking about earlier, embrace your calling and vocation.
Yes.
Like, you know, give your energy to we need to think of work again as something God has blessed us with, that God has given us certain gifts to fulfill and has given us a vocation. And that vocation is noble. That vocation is good. Pursue it.
Yeah.
You know,
I think part of this is, again, it goes back to creation with this building. it gives us a sense of accomplishment, because I think there is a God-given sense of a lack of satisfaction in that when we the ecologists, the Mother Earth crowd will say, you know, the most beautiful thing is pristine creation, untouched. Wrong. Adam's given the creation mandate to subdue the earth, take dominion over it. So the most beautiful thing is the natural world subdued under the dominion of man. And I think there's within us a God-given sense of there's got to be more. We can't just rest. We can't relax. We have to constantly be building, doing something, a sense of dissatisfaction. We can have more, a holy pursuit where we don't just rest. We work to make something better, to build something more. I think that's, now, of course, that can get out of hand. You can. Yeah,
and don't become a slave to it.
Exactly. Right. Of course. Again, back to Satan. He's going to take a God-given thing and distort it. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we can become workaholics. We can pursue money in an ungodly way. All that, of course.
Yeah.
But I think there is a godly sense of dissatisfaction that we have, that we look around our world and we want to do more, mm-hmm. build more. Subdue it more. I think that's from God. And I think we need to recognize that and in a wise, restrained, godly way, pursue that.
That's very good. And be stable. Another one, be stable and consistent. You know, too many, you know, and I can say this, you know, with our own lives, we know, you know, it's easy to quit.
Ooh.
It's easy to be a quitter. It's easy to, you know, one of the, and we'll get to role models here in a minute. One of the things my father, having a good role model matters. My father was a good role model for me. And, you know, whatever I started, he never let me quit.
Yeah.
Like if I, even a sport team, if I got in there and, you know, with soccer, you know, somebody, I think it was my father-in-law. Well, I won't say until he said about soccer. But anyways, I hated it.
Yeah.
I said, Dad, I don't want to do it. Nope. You're going to finish the season
because
you started it.
Yeah.
That was the kind of stuff that even for who I am today, you know, ministry is not easy. There are times you want to throw in the towel, right? No, I was trained in certain ways.
And why is that? Not just so that you would finish something you started, but because you made a commitment to your teammates.
I made a commitment to others. That's what he would always say.
In service of others.
Yes.
You can't abandon that. Even if you want to, you made a commitment to other people. That's why you must continue it.
And it would just be bad for me to learn how to quit.
Right, of course.
You know, but you're absolutely right. He always said that. So that's important. Be stable and consistent.
So that's, again, just we all want to quit at some point in life.
Right.
Want to quit our job. Want to quit our family. Want to just quit life.
Right.
It's too much. I can't take it. But as you said earlier, get outside of yourself.
Right.
You have to look to others. If I quit, who is impacted by this?
A man endures.
Yes.
Endurance is a quality. Hebrews says you have need of endurance. So endurance is a crucial quality to the calling that God gives a man.
And if it's not internal, if there's not enough within you to stay committed for yourself, look outside and look at others.
Right.
Stay in the fight for others.
Right. Next, I should have said 1, 2, 3, 4 because I'm giving like 7 of these things right now, but seek a good role model.
Yeah.
Like a mentor. We have to do better in the church to help young men with older men. There's this pattern in scripture, you know, older women helping younger women. Older men should be helping younger men. We should be thinking more along those lines. But having a godly man in your life who's endured,
yeah,
who's been through the wars, who has exhibited a love for his wife, for, you know, when you get these couples who've been married 60 years in this culture, you should get to know that guy.
Yes.
You should befriend that guy, who's raised children well. Look at his vocation. Those are the kind of men we need in our lives now.
And service to the church. And
so, yes, absolutely.
These guys, elders in our church, leaders in our church who have very full lives, mm-hmm. demanding jobs, families, et cetera. And yet on top of all that, they pour themselves out for the church.
Yes.
That's a real man.
That's a man. And this is an encouragement for those watching. That's why we don't send our kids out of church. We want them to observe their fathers worshiping. That's, and mothers. But
right.
Since we're focusing mm-hmm. on men, it's a beautiful thing when there's a man in church singing to the Lord. There was an article in Table Talk September that said men lead by singing.
Mm.
It's a really good little article. Yeah. Like, you know, for a young child to witness a father singing out to the Lord, that's a masculine thing.
Absolutely.
That's a beautiful thing. Culture may ridicule that. It may seem as weak, but that article's really, really helpful. To say that there's a witness in that.
Right.
To your children. So seek a good role model. I want to talk about this one to end on now. Invest in the church. Part of the challenge with the church, Bob Godfrey said this, is that the feminization of the church has not helped men.
Yeah.
We want to see men involved. The reality is that, you know, and I don't know what your experience has been, and this is not an indictment across the board when I say this, but a lot of times when I have couples, it will be the woman who's the spiritual strong one.
Yep.
Entering into this relationship, the man is, I don't know how many times I've seen it. They know very little about the faith. They say they're Christians, but you can already see the trajectory here.
Yep.
The trajectory is going to be the guy is not really too interested in theology, in growing, in understanding who the Lord is. You know, he'll follow the wife.
Yep. In leading his family, he's not interested.
Yeah. I mean, this is a big deal. This is a big deal. We could have had a whole show on this.
I think most of the problems in the church are weak men,
mm-hmm.
not fulfilling their God-given responsibilities.
Absolutely. Amen to that.
Not that women are free from sin, but the fallout of sin would be less great if men would fulfill their God-given duties and be strong leaders of their own lives and of their homes.
Amen to that.
It is an epidemic.
It's an epidemic.
In the church.
Yeah. And so what's happened is that, listen, if you've ever wondered, you know, we're a strong position, hold the strong position of scripture that only men can be pastors. You know, I do not permit a woman to teach or have authority. What's happened is because men have been so absent,
yes.
is that women have had to take these roles. And then what happens is that the children see, because men aren't teaching, they're not teaching the Sunday school classes, they're not leading. They see the whole church as women doing the work.
And why is Rosaria Butterfield so popular?
Yeah.
Number one, she's great. She's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Tremendous writer, tremendous speaker, all that. She should not be necessary.
No.
If pastors in the church would stand up and do their job and correct evil, Rosaria Butterfield would not be necessary. Mm-hmm. Her popularity is an indictment on the lack of leadership and courage of men in the church.
And she would agree with that. She would agree with that. Like she would say, why aren't the men saying these things? She said it to me.
Yeah.
Like, where are the men? Where's the leaders? You know, why aren't they calling out the wolves?
Right.
Why aren't they protecting the flock?
Yes.
So what you have happened then is this feminization of the church. It takes over the music. It takes over the worship. And then what happens is the men don't connect with it.
Right.
So, you know, they're going to be out. We talked about last time with Sabbath, you know, and by the way, that's such a blessing for men in the work rest pattern, you know, rest work pattern. That's why the Sabbath matters for you. You can rest from that work every Sabbath, right? Right. And lead your family and that kind of thing. But they're going to see this. So they're, you know, they're more interested in the ball game. They're more interested in riding the four wheeler. They're more interested in doing all this manly stuff because the church isn't manly.
Right.
Well, that's got to be corrected.
Yeah.
This is the most manly thing you can do. Come
right.
sing to the Lord and lead your family.
Right.
Love, be a leader in the church, help the next generation, study the scriptures, grow yourself.
And we can help them in this.
Yeah.
Get rid of the Jesus is my boyfriend songs.
Yeah. And, right. Sing Psalm 68.
Come on. Yeah.
You know, let's the get battle, some warrior psalms here.
The battle hymn of the Huguenots. My, exactly one of my right. favorite psalms.
Yeah.
So yeah, we can assist these guys who are looking for a masculine, a worship, a style of worship and content of worship that appeals to men. Right. Yes, we can correct some of the errors of the past and assist them in this. So it's not just an hour of feminization on right. Sunday.
Right, right. Well, that was, I really appreciate the discussion. There's a lot more we could say.
You feel more manly now?
Yeah, yeah. A lot more we could say, but I hope this helped people to think through. Everyone falls into extremes.
Right.
Like, that's our day.
Yeah.
We just jump from.
I think it's our nature.
It is. It's
our
nature.
Fallen nature.
Yeah, there's always a ditch on either side of the road.
Yeah, it's right? easier yeah. because thinking through the right path is more difficult. That's hard.
Right.
It's easier just to fall into the extreme. Oh, then I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
But being wise, picking the right thing, yeah. much more difficult.
Yeah. Dan offered today to go sleeveless, but I told him it probably
a Bounty Grace turned into a gun show.
Sleeveless. We go sleeveless for the program today. But
it was so hot in Southern California a few weeks ago.
It was so hot.
That I was looking for a sleeveless Geneva gown.
Now that would be a sight. That would be a sight.
You got to flex for the benediction. Well,
only if you could wear
May the
that.
Lord bless you.
All right. Well, thanks for the good thoughts, Dan. We'll
see you next
come
time.
Back next time.